If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the Supreme Self. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is The Things That Matter to You Matter. So pay attention. So if you're ready to consider the things that matter to you, let's take a deep breath together and come into perfect alignment with your divine self. Find that place within yourself that matters the most to you. It's within you already. If that is peace, go there. Simply go there. If it's love, go there. Why go anyplace else? When you depart, that state that is your ideal state, it's only because you've gone into the mind, which is never truly present. It's always thinking of the past or projected into the future. So you can drop the mind and simply go to that place within yourself. Explore the inner contents of your innermost being. You're going to find wonders there. You're going to find everything you've ever sought in any other place, waiting for your discovery within. So before we work this evening, ask for the clearance for your own self, that whatever could be lifted that no longer serves you, whatever condition or energetic, ask that it be cleared through grace according to your highest good. When you say according to your highest good, you allow God infinite wiggle room to insert a higher plan for you that, had you not asked, would not have been available. Do ask for precisely what you feel would best serve you at this time, but put the caveat, if it's for my highest divine good, and all this or something better. And consider, if you will, that you, as a divine, perfect being, are a multifaceted diamond. Visualize in your inner mind your outline as a person and see it radiating as if it were composed of diamonds. And see each facet radiating divine glory and light. Every cell, every pore is radiating divine perfection and health and light and beauty. That is your true cosmic being. In each incarnation, that diamond of your true self is turned in a new direction, reflecting light through a new facet. So consider that facet that is radiating through your personal presentation at this time? What is its quality? Do you know that you can ask inwardly? And if you're very still, you will start receiving a flow of thoughts that reveal exactly the question's response. There is nothing that is denied your knowing if you ask. If you're clear about what it is you seek to know, just ask. And then observe the mind and see what flows into your awareness. It's so simple to attune. So simple. We don't realize we can simply go there, that it's available. So as soul, we are here to experience all things and thereby to learn compassion and empathy. We are here to develop into conscious divine co-creators, masters, God essence presenting throughout the cosmos. And upon completing this Earth curriculum of self-mastery, we then move on to greater arenas of service elsewhere in the cosmos. And so each lifetime we experience a new period in history, a new cultural environment, and a new facet of our being. Today we're living in the 21st century within a fast-paced, technology-driven, information-overloaded society. And therefore, we adapt and flow with what is present right now in our lives and in our world in a way that we can express our true nature and shine that facet of our spiritual being and still be congruent with the world around us. We have to be in that fast pace, in a yogic state of inner peace. So while the body may have to really do some intense time management to keep everything in balance and in flow, at the same time, we're moving deeper into our spiritual self. But bear in mind, we are also those same souls who lived in earlier periods of history. We are, in most cases, our own relatives returned in new roles and costumes. Ponder that. Our own relatives returned in new roles and costumes. You know, it's common to return in family groupings. Interacting in family groups forms strong bonds, which then carry forward into the new incarnations. So in that sense, everyone you encounter in this life is one you've known in the past. So you might consider this in terms of graduating classes as well. We incarnate as a class, a group of souls that have come in to experience a particular period of time, in this case, the 21st century. So we're all classmates, and we graduate, usually, as classmates. We move on, the life wave moves on to the next class, and we usually move on to other more advanced classes. So those who have served as our teachers, our way showers, our masters, those we look to as more advanced beings like Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, and so on, are those who've graduated in an earlier cycle and now serve us as masters and way showers. But remember, when you graduate, you will be a master teacher, a way shower to the next incoming group of souls in the next cycle, if you choose to. You can go on and do other work in other dimensions and worlds as well. But some of you will choose to come back as a master, a teacher, a way shower, a mystical traveler, whatever you want to call that. So right now today, this moment, you are in training for your future. You are in training to be a conscious, divine co-creator and co-worker. You will be the Buddhas and the Christs of the future. It's good to think of these things, you know, not to lose sight of the bigger picture. Life is intense, and we tend to let life roll over us like a, what do you call those things, a steamroller. We need to call the shots. We need to be on top of our flow and not being pushed by the illusion of time and the importance of things. The things that are most important, beloved, are the things that matter to you personally. Those are the things that you are to pay attention to. So if we were to ask, what matters to you? What really matters to you? What would you say? Have you ever really looked at what matters, really matters to you? Well, if not, perhaps you could do a little journaling exercise in your own timing. You could list the things that really matter to you, and then pare that list down until you can see a consistent pattern of what really matters to you, which is different than the personality preferences and idiosyncrasies and habitual patterns that we like to keep going, you know, the comfort zone. I'm talking about those deep things that matter so much to you, they invariably draw your attention. In fact, they are the things that you give attention to. So what do you invariably notice all the time, wherever you are and with whomever? Oh, sure, you know, there's going to be more than one thing. But if you pay attention, you'll discover there is a theme that connects what you notice. You might ask, well, why in the world should I care? Well, because these are clues in revealing you to yourself. What really matters to you is what you tend to always notice. What do you always notice? And I'm talking a lot about energy here, because a master is one that is very sensitive to energy and its correct distribution. Every master is a distributor of the divine energy that we call the Holy Spirit, or the divine light and sound. They are masters of directing energy, which means they have to recognize it, and know how and when and where it needs to be directed. When we try to do that, we get ourselves in trouble more often than not. So until you have mastered energy, it's best to offer yourself as a conduit and allow that greater master form to direct the energy through you. But meanwhile, we are where we are, and regardless of where we are, there is a level in which we are already that which we seek in time space to become. So bear that in mind too. No one is a beginner. No one is a rank neophyte. We are multidimensional, and there is a level beyond all the time-space paradigms and continuums in which you are absolutely one with the divine spirit. Absolutely perfect in every way. There's a level in which you are the master, the way shower. There's a level in which you are the student and the disciple. There's a level in which you have the human expression that sometimes falls asleep and doesn't remember any of this stuff. But that doesn't change the fact that you are that, whether you remember it and are conscious of it or not. So what is it that you tend to always notice? The things that matter to you matter. So pay attention. Why is that important? Again, it gives you a clue as to your soul purpose in your life. And moreover, it gives you a clue as to what your work will be when you graduate from Earth and become that divine cosmic energy director. So what matters to you matters because it is what you've come to address in yourself and contribute to the world. We're each importing energy into this collective that we call the world. Now, we've often said that we see in these lower dimensions by reflection. We see in another what we've recognized in ourselves. This is so important. We see in another what we've recognized in ourselves. You see, this thing that we call the transformation, this thing which we call ascension or transfiguration or self-mastery or self or God-realization, is not a change at all, but simply a recognition of what's always been. It's a recognition. So we see in another what we've recognized in ourselves. And we see the world as it appears through the lens of our own consciousness. As within, so without, in terms of the lower worlds. When we are filled with loving kindness and goodwill, we will experience a world that reflects back to us as being loving, kind, and filled with goodwill. When we are at peace within ourselves, we experience a world of peace. When I was in an interview with Sai Baba many years ago, I was thinking inwardly without outwardly sharing that living in Los Angeles was like living in hell. The graffiti and the gangs and the, you know, everything going on at that time was just so difficult for me to accept, even though those things were not a part of my physical life. Just driving downtown, you know, I'd be so repulsed. And Sai Baba, hearing my thoughts, turned to me and said, when you're at peace within yourself, all the world will be experienced as peaceful. Well, I was feeling like Los Angeles was hell when I went to see Sai Baba. 4 months later, I come back home to Los Angeles, and I kept saying to my husband, gosh, it's so different here. Everything's so clean and orderly. So peaceful. What have they done? And he kind of looked at me and chuckled because he knew my husband was a master from Venus, so he was very, very wise. And he knew it was the effect of my being with Sai Baba for 4 months, that the outer environment was just the same. And then when I walked into our two-bedroom apartment, it seemed ginormous to me. Gosh, 4 or 5 families could live in that sized apartment if it was in India. And I realized that the differences in the different cultures are really a matter of how large your bathroom is and how big your kitchen is. But life is very much the same wherever you go. We have very minimal needs, really speaking. Very minimal. And I thought, my gosh, why isn't everybody in America, God realized, we have such clean, orderly, peaceful, easy to navigate environment. Living in the little village in India in the ashram, it took all day just to find the wherewithal to make a single meal. You know, the shops were open at a different time, and you had to go and get milk here, eggs there, vegetables there. You had to go all over the place to get, you know, things together for a meal. And here it's so simple. We have our big supermarkets. Everything comes prepackaged, prepared, ready to eat, whatever. We don't realize that we fill our lives down here with things that don't really matter. They don't really matter. And so we amass all of these thousands and one million things that are meaningless, that don't give us anything of value that we're going to take beyond this incarnation. So in the 21st century, I would say that's our biggest challenge, is to import into our lives only those things that really matter, that are really important. Yes, we all have to make our living. That's our first responsibility, is to take care of ourselves, financially, physically, in terms of your health, whatever. Because unless you have a physical body, you're not going to be able to go through the classroom curriculum down here. So first, you do have to take care of making sure you have food and a roof over your head and your family is provided for. But in that stage of life, you have to use it as a yoga. It becomes a yoga when you do it for God, when you do it for the sake of the self that you are realizing, when you do it out of the sense of this is my dharma. I need to make a living, take care of my family. That becomes karma yoga when you offer it to the divine. So don't waste the opportunity of the work you have to do by just doing it and thinking you're doing it as work. Then you get the karma. But if you do it as an offering of your love made manifest, of your dedication and devotion and commitment to your family made manifest, then it becomes a yoga and you don't have karma. So attitude is everything. How you do what you do. So what matters to you matters because it is what you come to address in yourself and contribute to the world. So the world we see, according to Sai Baba, arises only as an idea. As it is remembered, it arises. It's our interpretation that colors it and makes it seem the way it is. But it's an all a machination of the mind, a product of our own personal inner universe or state of consciousness. So the observer determines what is observed. In fact, they are one, the observer and the observed. Now we're getting into quantum physics here, which is great to inquire into for deeper insights into why we see things as we do. So again, what do you notice first off? All the time. All the time. And this is a clue as to your sole purpose this time, as well as what you've come here to learn and personally resonate into the collective consciousness we call the world. For example, some of you may notice when things are not in order, not flowing in harmony, I would be one of those. I tend to notice where energies are not combining and flowing in harmony. Like, for example, the freeway. We have probably one of the busiest freeways in the world here in Los Angeles. Bumper to bumper, very often. But when the flow of the traffic is such and everyone is flowing in harmony at the same rate of speed, there is very seldom any accidents. However, if someone is driving too slow or too fast and cutting in and out of the traffic, that's when accidents occur. So I'm extremely sensitive to the flow of traffic when I'm driving or in a car. And when I sense that something is not in harmony, I'll immediately go silent and hold the resonance of harmony and hold the light for the balance to take place. Often I'll chant. Often I chant the Gayatri mantra or some other mantra. And that holds the light, holds that presence, so that the harmonious flow can take place. And I also place the light with the cars and with the drivers. I kind of own the freeway. You know, I expand my awareness to include the freeway and all the cars so that we can all move in harmony together. And that's another way, if that occurs to you, you can do that. But that sensitivity to harmonious flow can also lend itself to knowing when to speak and when to remain silent. One of the things I notice is when people speak without taking into account the state of a person before they speak. Very often people will come up and try to speak to me, not realizing I'm not in the body, I'm working on some other universe and some other dimension. And so I have to come back from wherever I am to anchor enough consciousness in the body so I can respond to them. Which if they were more sensitive to living with a person who's multidimensional, they would stop and notice where I am before they spoke. That would be a person that's, you know, not sensitive to a state of another person. I know when we were with our teacher, John Roger, or with Sai Baba, for that matter, we're very, very sensitive, especially to John Roger, who's very multidimensional. What is his state? I would never just barge in and jump into a conversation with him. I'd be very quiet, and I would wait, watch to see if there was an opening. So it's important to be sensitive to where people are focused at that moment, and the state of receptivity before you speak, and the right timing. It's a great art. Because if you try to speak when that person is not in that space, then you create disharmony, or you're simply ignored, and you know they're not hearing what you're saying. So thus, harmony and maintaining a harmonious flow matters very much to me. And I'll do just about anything possible to maintain harmony in my life and interactions wherever I am. Now, when I was a young person, that caused me to almost sell out for harmony. You know, where you bend over backwards and swallow your opinions and your needs because you don't want to create disharmony. You don't want to rock the boat, so to speak. So that tendency of us to withhold communication or to feel like we have no voice and we can't speak out what we really want or need is the downside of being overly sensitive. And yeah, I did that for half of my life. And now to some extent too, sometimes I think it's just not worth it to go into disharmony over something I may want, which is not really that important to me. So you need to pick your battle, so to speak, if you're sensitive to disharmony, which I think a lot of the people that I work with are very much like myself. They're highly sensitive, and they're learning to be in the world and not be, you know, like a peeled snail. You know, we have to develop some sort of a sense of self presence to buffer the harshness and the disharmonious energy that often prevails in the world. That's one of the things you learn, you know, living in this world, is that you select the best things for yourself that you possibly can within your choices. So when I sense disharmony, I usually go silent and hold a steady light focus to restore harmonic resonance. And that's always good, to go silent. Or, you know, if you're real sensitive and you have to communicate with someone else, you can write a note or send them an email. And that also buffers that sensitivity if, you're concerned there's going to be a reaction. So when we have these soul lessons, for example, myself, in terms of harmonious flow, I've been placed with very disharmonious people and situations throughout my life. And so I've had to bring myself into harmony by flowing and adjusting harmoniously with the existing person or situation, which was simply easier said than done. But it becomes like an art form, a dance. And, you know, over the years, I've, for the most part, learned to flow in harmony with what is present. But again, everything that matters to you is going to have their exact polar opposite. And when you have a preference or a nature that notices harmony, you get disharmony or conflict as the polar opposite. So another way to kind of notice your own self, your own the qualities that you're here to develop, is to notice who you most enjoy keeping company with. Really pay attention. Usually, you know, if you're really a blessed soul, you will have some people, at least one or two, hopefully, that embody everything that you would like to be. Very often there are mentors, or they're the people that we study under or we admire and respect a great deal. And why do you like being with that person? Did you ever really think about it? What qualities do you admire and appreciate in the people you most like to be around? Now, realize those are the very qualities you are discovering within yourself. And they're being mirrored to you by that person. And had you not those qualities within yourself already brought to your attention, it would be impossible for you to see them in another. That's a very important key. We can only see and appreciate, or dislike for that matter, what is within our own self. So again, you might want to notice and journal and see all of the similarities between yourself and that person. And then own those qualities, because you see them, because you have them within you and they're awakening. So as you move more consciously into your own mastery levels, those qualities will constitute your mission as a divine co-creative spirit. Yes. And as things are experienced here in the lower worlds, there's always going to be the polar opposite. You're going to have to deal with that and neutralize it. Now, harmonic resonance, with its polar opposite, disharmonious dissonance, would be what I'm dealing with. So you find your own polar opposite to whatever it is that matters most to you. Find the polar opposite of that But to go beyond polarity, that's possible only through divine neutrality. And that is what you move into when you move into conscious soul awareness. And where is that? The place just above the thinking mind. The soul is by nature happy, harmonious, peaceful, neutral in the sense it has no judgment. It recognizes everything as completely right and perfect and flowing as it needs to be. That's the soul. No judgment. No right and wrong. No greater or lesser. No up or down. The soul is expanded awareness of unconditional loving acceptance of all things. So soul simply accepts all things as the way they are meant to be according to divine order and perfection. So soul is a very, very laid-back, peaceful place to operate out of. Soul awareness is also very ordinary in the sense that it doesn't have to do any kind of like psychic finagling around and producing a phenomena. It simply is present and available and doesn't have an agenda. It isn't trying to make anything happen. In fact, the soul leaves everything be, leaves everything alone. The mind is always trying to change and rearrange and control and manipulate. You know, it gets really tiresome to be around a person that's heavily mental because they can never let things be. You might say, well, yeah, but a lot of things have to be changed in the world. Not if you're in soul awareness. If the divine spirit would guide you and direct you into some particular area that benefits the world, good. But in truth, the soul is very unambitious. It's only the lower nature that's ambitious. And ambition is one of the ways that we work through karma. Yeah, so people who are really filled with ambition, it goads them into activity, which goads them into dealing with things in their life, getting involved, working through their karma, their issues. But the soul is completely without ambition, completely without agenda, without preference, without change. It simply is love manifesting, unconditional love manifesting, and joy. The soul is quiet, but within, deep within, is a bubbling joy that nothing can touch. It's not like that euphoric joy because something has happened or you've gotten something you wanted or life is the way you want it to be. The joy of the soul is a special wisdom. It's not an emotion. It's a special understanding of the perfection and the innate divinity of all things, of the perfection of all states. You might say, well, how can you know, being a drunk or drug addict or this or that be perfection? Well, again, back to the facet. The soul came in and having chosen to work with alcoholic addiction or drug addiction, which was right and perfect and proper for those souls that are in those situations. Or working with the issue of being handicapped in some way. You see, these are all choices that are made consciously by the soul before it embodies. And we think these are terrible things. I remember my husband brought home a homeless man to stay with us during Thanksgiving. And he slept on our couch. And during the time he was with us, we talked to him a lot. How did he get in that condition? How did he Why was he homeless? You know, how do you work being homeless? And he said, never, never worry about people who are homeless, because they're homeless because they want to be, and they know how to work the system to get what they need. I'm quoting this man, because I do care deeply about the homeless situation, so I'm not saying don't care, but I'm quoting what he said. And he had this whole thing. He said, I'm going to bring everything you need for your Thanksgiving dinner, okay? He said, leave it to me. I'll bring everything. So he knew the cycle of the bakery and the grocery stores, and when they put out the cheese, and when they put out the vegetable, and when they put out the fruit, and different restaurants, when they, you know, had, like, for example, usually there's a great deal to eat, you know, on Sunday, because, you know, people come, go out to the restaurant to eat. So he had each day where he could get whatever food he wanted, and he knew where he could sleep, where he could take a shower, where, you know, he had the whole thing taken care of. And he said, I like being without the responsibility of having to pay rent and having to work at a job. He said, I don't want to do that. I want to live my life freely and be able to pick up and move about as I wish. And so we learned quite a bit about him in the few weeks that he stayed with us. So the many, many things that we tend to take a dim view of and think, oh, those poor people, how horrible that they're in this situation, and I feel so sorry for them. If you look at it through the eyes of the soul, again, you will see the perfection of the divine plan and why things are the way they are. You would look into the past and you would see the history that has brought that soul to that particular choice. I remember John Roger was walking across the bridge somewhere in the United States, and he came upon a woman who was, he said, in her very last incarnation, she had experienced everything but being homeless and penniless. And so she had chosen that incarnation to experience that. And when he came upon her, he reached into his pocket and gave her all the money that he had. And he said, you never saw a person go so quickly, change their state into absolute joy. She went into absolute joy. But there again, when he looked and he saw the pattern, he saw that she was in her very last incarnation. So he gave her the spiritual promise, which would enable her to achieve completion in this lifetime. So she had the good karma to come into the presence of the spiritual traveler and receive the gift of emancipation. And she appeared as a homeless person on a bridge. And you just don't know, do you? We often hear the phrase, you know, that you could be entertaining angels unaware. And very, very often the Master, the Lord Maitreya, the world teacher, and the Master Jesus will very, very often assume the form of a person who is seemingly homeless or panhandling. I remember, I think I've told you this story, but I'll tell it again. It's such a great one. I was in Connecticut, in Yale University is. I forget the name now, Hartford, I guess. And I was with Commander Allian and Solariel, and we were going to a store to buy some UFO books, because back in those days, the early 90s, they didn't have very many, you know, where you could get UFO books. So anyway, as we walked into the store, there was a panhandler sitting, you know, by the door, and I didn't want to stop and, you know, fool around with my purse or anything. I just wanted to go in the store and get UFO books. So I walked by him, didn't give him anything, which is unusual. Usually I do that. I mean, I give them money. I don't walk by them. But for some reason, I just, my head was somewhere else and I wasn't thinking. So I go out, you know, we leave the store after we get the UFO books. And I go down the street a little ways and I'm standing there. And I look back and there's this hippie looking guy dressed from head to toe with rainbow hat, rainbow clothes, rainbow shoes, everything. Very vivid. And he opened up his purse, his little purse that he had, his little coin purse, and he said, "I don't have much, but this is all I have." And he emptied it into, you know, the upturned hat of the man that was sitting outside the UFO shop. And I thought, oh my gosh. And then I turned back after I mentioned something to Solario. I turned back and in that instant, they both vanished. And you could see the streets up and down, and they were nowhere. And then I knew inwardly that the panhandler was Lord Maitreya. And the hippie guy was Jesus. And ever since then, you know, I've been more aware of those unusual situations that you can't forget, where the person, like in this case, were very startling in their presentation and their interaction, but then vanished. I turned back a second or two later, and they're both gone. So the masters, male and female, can assume any form. You know, one of the favorite things of Maitreya is to look like a bum with a cigarette and a beer in his hand, and or appear like a drunk, or in some situation that we would judge as being non-spiritual or whatever. He loves to appear in that way to break our crystallizations as to what we determine to be, quote, spiritual. He likes to bust our chops. When it comes to, you know, all of these illusions, really, that we have set around what it means and what it looks like to be spiritual. Very often people will complain about their spouses saying they're not spiritual. And yet, when I would look at those spouses, I would see them taking very, very, very good care of their wives, their children, very focused on bringing home the bacon, so to speak, you know, bringing home that income, keeping that lifestyle and that roof over their heads, and providing and seeing that their children go to college or whatever. That is spiritual. Doing your duty in life is spiritual, very spiritual. And when you have a mystic or a person that does a lot of out-of-body work, invariably they will have a very grounded mate. You've got to have somebody that is able to take care of the material world if you're operating in a very expanded state of consciousness. It doesn't work too well to have two mystics under the same roof. So look for spirituality in a sense of integrity, a sense of being accountable and responsible, taking care of you, taking care of your family, being dependable, being kind, being generous, being loving, being that person who can bring calm when there's agitation, being that person that goes the extra mile to help someone. Those are spiritual qualities. Those are spiritual qualities, not just sitting in, you know, meditation all day long. We're running judgments on what people are eating or whether they're smoking or drinking or eating whatever. You know, those are the silly little judgments we place that block our loving, that block our flow of harmony. When are we going to wake up and realize that only God appears before us in and as everyone, that everyone is an incarnation of the one divine beloved, that everyone is lovable. Oh, it's so easy to love and get all sentimental over cute babies and sweet situations. But when you can absolutely open your heart to the most unattractive, obnoxious, disgusting-looking person, maybe foul-smelling, when you can just see beyond that, like Mother Teresa, like Amici, when you can just see everyone as your own child and just love them, then you're really, really, really God-realized. You may not even have any clue what God-realization is, but that is a demonstration of truly seeing the one in all and the all in one. So it comes back, you see, to each one of us. And each one of us probably has a something that really matters to us as to what we would most like to see in the world. And I think probably we would recognize that the world really needs to come together and work in harmony. If we could just begin within our own life and live in a harmonious way with the people that are in our life, with the situations at work and wherever we find ourselves, if we could just establish peace in our interactions, in our own personal life, that would have a ripple effect and create more and more and more peace and harmony. And if everyone just paid attention to that, in no time it would spread around the earth. But instead, most of us wait for somebody else to do it, or we're waiting for Christ to return, or waiting for Sai Baba to come as Prema Sai Baba, or we're waiting for Maitreya to announce himself and appear on television, or, you know, there's any number of delaying tactics which basically say, I want them to fix it. I want the space people to land and fix everything that's on our earth and clear up all of our pollution. And, you know, that's where we go with that. We don't realize that everything begins and ends with us. Everything begins and ends because we're one. We're one spirit. And whatever resonant tone we vibrate into the collective makes a tremendous impact. And we all have to move into that state for it to be complete and total for everyone all the time. So it's a wonderful thing to develop that extreme sensitivity to what feels right in terms of energy when you begin to recognize that everything has an order and an arrangement that feels right or somehow is off. I think we can all identify that feeling within ourselves, and it's a good guideline to observe. For example, an interior designer needs this sensitivity in harmoniously decorating a home, or a gardener, or a landscape designer, or a city planner, in having the sensitivity to know exactly where to put what, so there is a flow of harmony and beauty and facilitation. So we are the functionaries, the hosts, the importers, the facilitators, and the conduits through which harmonic resonance and peace and divine order appear in this lowest frequency band that we call the material universe. We are the means through which God brings that divine heaven present here and now. Another definition of heaven on earth is where the majority of the inhabitants of earth have established soul contact and are integrating that higher nature. That's why we emphasize so much taking a deep breath and calling yourself forward into alignment with your divine self. And we ask that you ask for your own clearance so that you present yourself to spirit, to this moment, to this day, to this occasion, with as much clarity and alignment as you can possibly facilitate. Because that helps all of us. We are the light team here. And we are here to remind each other of those keys that will work for us in keeping us conscious, aware, and in presence. In that presence that is our unique spiritual presentation. It has a feel to it. It feels empowered. It feels dauntless. It feels clear. It feels peaceful. And it feels available. So locate presence. Presence is your own divinity presenting. And it may feel, if you're used to it, being in it all the time, it may feel very normal. Because it doesn't have an agenda it's trying to impress you with or coerce you with. Presence is simply present. It's watching. It's listening. It's attuned and sensitive to the mood of the moment and what's taking place. And wherever one in the state of presence is present, harmony and beauty and divine order simply present. So you see, doing nothing but just walking in the room filled with your own divine presence is enough to import heaven and grace into that situation. And that's how it gets into the world and into the various organizations of which you are a part, and into the various workplaces, or political arenas, or religious contexts in which you move. You are the one that brings that divine order. And that is really the work of the light workers and the light bearers, the awakened. That's our work. We're to do that wherever we are. So learn to go into situations without personal need. I found that every time I would go into a place seeking to get something, I would have a bad experience. I have learned to go only with a thought of what I could give. And when I do that, I receive so much. It's amazing. So try to look at your associations and where you go in terms of your motive. Are you going to be a giver or simply to be a taker? And the giving hand never lacks, but the taker will always be needy. So which would you rather be? Always leave the place that you go better than when you entered. Greater peace, greater love, a greater sense of well-being. Bring comfort with every glance. Bring encouragement and upliftment with every word. And you'll find that that's what really matters. Really, really matters. Both in yourself and in our world. I hope this has been useful. We are celebrating the Festival of Light, whether you call it Christmas or Hanukkah or Diwali or many of the other festivals that fall around these months in the fall. And so we send love and blessings to all the people throughout the earth and all the people beyond the earth in other worlds. And we keep expanding our love and our blessing until there's not a single life form throughout existence that does not receive our blessing and our gratitude. And let's raise our hands and we'll chant the Anahi three times. And we will send the intention of our loving presence to bless the entire earth and all life forms everywhere. Deep breath. And may all experience a true holy day during these holidays. May one and all receive a touch of God's love and a touch of the wonder and awesomeness of this life eternal that we're all living and sharing. Grace and love to each one of you. Namaste.